Look, what is this?
It's a podcast, Snake. It's the Awesome Cast.
Awesome Cast. Oh, man. I hate the music. Folks, and we're back. Well, yeah, we've been gone. We've been gone for a week.
Yeah, just a little bit.
Just a little bit. Yeah, sorry about that, folks. We had plans, ambitions, goals.
No, you didn't.
They just all failed. No, they were there. They were there. Just, you know, people didn't feel well on the day we could record. You had to go off be an internet superstar.
I was the superstar for the weekend, yes. Or one of many.
But now we're back. We're not sure if this is going to be the Friday podcast or what. We might record another show, but we're not sure. But we're recording this one now, regardless, so we're going to have something on Friday.
As you may be able to tell, this is DJ Inhibito, and to my left is...
It is Basil, as always.
And this is the Awesome Cast.
We're back at Casa DJ Inhibito.
That's right. This time not in the kitchen.
Not in the kitchen. We're now in the glorious dining room.
Living room.
Living room,
close
whatever. It's a room. There's people in it doing things, talking into microphones.
Yes, that's all that matters. I can't afford a real studio yet.
So it'll work. If you hear the sounds of crickets, it's all right. They're cool. We're down with crickets.
Yes. My house is totally in the middle of a forest somewhere. It's crazy.
And yes.
Condenser mics pick up every damn thing.
That's right. That's why we bought one.
Every damn thing in the damn room.
So, as we had mentioned... Our good DJ here was off being a nerdcore superstar.
Yes, yes, I was.
Nerdapalooza, which was where in Florida?
Yeah, Orlando, Florida.
It's pretty much, why you tell, it's sort of like a Lollapalooza, but for nerdcore artists.
Yeah. I went to the one last year as well, Nerdapalooza 2007, but that was only for like a day. And I think there was like 12 artists there, including CSHC. Computer Science Hardcore, for those who don't know. And this year, for 2008, it was a lot bigger of a deal. There was a lot more people there.
3 days, right?
2 days.
2 days.
Friday and Saturday, and it was a crazy amount of bands. And it just wasn't nerdcore rap. It was wizard rock, like Harry and the Potters. There was another neat little band in there called Zombies Organize and Killer Robots, which were crazy. They looked like silver pewter Warhammer Space Marines playing guitars.
Nice.
And stuff. It was crazy. They put on a really good show. Some of the Troma people were there. All around, it was a pretty nice little weekend. Got to meet a lot of new people there. It was really neat. Got to see a lot of bands I've wanted to see, including I got to see Whitey Cracker perform. I got to see Miff and DJ Snyder of the Metamystics. They were very cool. Got to meet Rocket Propelled Geeks or RPG. Yeah, it was very nice. And of course, CSHC got to perform.
How was that?
I thought it went pretty well. It was my first time doing live scratching as a DJ at a show, and I think that went over pretty well too. If anyone's curious seeing the show, it's www.youtube.com/Conyeezy, CONYEEZY, and we've posted some videos of our performance up on there.
We'll definitely throw that up in the show notes. So,
yes.
If you want to check it out, and that's what I unfortunately was lame and therefore did not go. But now I feel I've experienced it at least a little bit via the YouTube. And please leave some comments. Though if you're trolls, you know, don't be lame.
F a bunch of trolls. It was a good weekend. It was basically 2 days of just nerd music, wall to wall, 12. Doors opened at noon and lasted until 2 a.m. each day, and from like 1 to 2 was both freestyle sessions. And I also got to meet MC Front a lot while I was down there, and he was a pretty cool cat.
So you actually talked to him? Or?
Yeah. He was very approachable, very nice guy. Him and Whitey Cracker both, I was really impressed. And Schaefer the Dark Lord was there too. Schaefer the Dark Lord and MC Front actually closed out the first day. And they were the headliners for that day.
Right.
And Whitey Cracker was towards the end, and he did a pretty good job on Saturday night, too.
Nice. You know, very, played on Saturday?
We played on Saturday afternoon, yeah.
Cool.
After us, it was Ward Burglar and the Metamistics guys. And that was a pretty banging show.
And a Random was there?
Random was there. He was, if you may remember, he was there on at MTAC with us as well. And yeah, he performed Friday morning, and he put on a really great show. He did the little freestyle thing to everybody as well.
Nice.
You know, that's always impressive to listen to.
Yeah, Random was definitely a highlight of MTAC, so yeah, I'm glad to see that he's still
He was definitely cool, loose. Cool to see again. Cool to meet. Cool guy. Very cool, laid-back guy. I also want to give a shout-out to the Impulse Records crew and MCRT and anyone else who helped put together that event. It was an awesome time for all, I thought.
Yes.
And if you didn't go, you're lame.
Well, I'll find a way to live for myself.
You're lame.
Yeah, it's true. Okay, so tonight we're going to talk about a video game, as me and Inubito are wont to do. Yet another game that ends with the Roman the number 4.
Metal Gear.
In case you ever know, it's Metal Gear Solid 4.
Metal Gear!
Just so you realize just how lame we were and how geeky we were in playing this. Neither of us own PS3s.
Oh, no, no.
Inubito, you know, convinced a friend of his to buy it and play it over at his place.
Yes, we sat down for about 3 days and played through the entire damn game. And he pretty much watched me because Metal Gear was pretty much a movie. A really long movie.
And what I did was I bought the limited edition copy of the game, the limited edition strategy guide, because it's a lithograph, and I convinced my friend Mike Knuckles to let me borrow his PS3 for a week. So I played all week and beat it that way.
Yes.
Awesome. So even though neither of us own PS3s, we still went out of our way to make sure we played this game. And I think it was worth it.
I think it was, too. I don't think it would have been worth it if I had actually bought a PS3 just for it. But that's okay, because I didn't.
And yeah,
it was, well,
yeah.
It was quite worth it in that aspect.
So now here's our talking about Metal Gear Solid 4.
We're not even going to give you spoiler warnings. It's just, you can't say anything about Metal Gear Solid without having spoilers.
No spoilers. Well, no, all spoilers. No spoiler warnings. Yeah, there's no way to talk about MGS4. Without spoilers.
Okay, cue some music.
So, okay. Metal Gear Solid 4 is kind of a weird event, almost.
Yeah.
As a war game. Because this is the game that has to conclude a story, a set of stories that started in, like, the 80s. It is now, you know, it's transpired over six games. Mm. And it has to tie everything up. Particularly the Metal Gear Solid series, which are with Sony PlayStation. Mm. There were two games, Metal Gear and Metal Gear Solid Snake.
Snake's Revenge.
Weird. All right, first, it was on the MSX?
Yes.
Or MCX?
There was an MSX game.
It was MSX, which is sort of a computer, yet video game system in Japan.
That we didn't get over here.
That we never got. Yes. That we got a credibly done, but still awesome, NES port of the first game. And then another team actually developed a game called Snake's Revenge for the NES.
Oh, okay.
That was not actually... It was actually touted as a Metal Gear game, but not made by Hideo Kojima or his team. And apparently they even were like, hey, what should we do about these things that we're doing this game? They actually got his advice on it. But he made his own game called Metal Gear Solid Solid Snake.
Oh, okay.
That we never saw.
I got you.
Until they did the... subsistence version in Metal Gear Solid 3 for the PS2. It was on the second disc that you can't get anymore. It had the MSX versions of...
Interesting. I never
the original two Metal Gears with, like, retranslated dialogue.
Oh, really?
And, like, they actually replaced all the portraits with the artist's portraits.
Mm.
They're really cool.
So no more of the truck have started to move and all that?
Right. And no more Sean Connery's Big Boss.
Dang.
But they're still really cool in their own right. Mm. That, and actually, there was actually no truck moving in the MSX version, MCX version.
Lame.
Like, you actually did an underwater thing and came up. Huh. Like in the original Metal Gear Solid, which is where this set of stories really began.
Yeah. There are a few harkbacks to the original Metal Gear games, but not by much.
But there's a crap ton of heartbacks to like
Solid 2 and 3.
Yeah.
And the original one a little bit, but more on that.
The original one a lot. Like,
I guess.
I mean, there's with an entire act dedicated to just
going
back to Metal Gear Solid 1. It was crazy.
Yeah.
But sort of a backstory, if you've never played Metal Gear Solid, which I'm sure you have, mm-hmm. but I'm going to talk about it anyways. Metal Gear Solid 1 started off as a place called Shadow Moses Island in the archipelago of Alaska, mm-hmm. where these renegade units of special forces called Foxhound, which was Snake's old unit before he retired, took over a testing base. So they drug Solid Snake back out of retirement and made him go check it out. On his way, he met a dude named Otacon, who was this mm-hmm. awesome nerd guy who would pee in his pants and be surprised that they were using a giant robot for evil purposes.
Otacon's not really that awesome.
Even though he loves those Japanese animes.
Yeah. Hence why he's the name Otacon.
Stands for Otaku Convention.
He needs to go back to pissing his pants.
Yeah, and he was like, they're using my giant robot for evil. And we're it's like, it's a giant robot, Otacon. Are you stupid? Anyways.
Oh, Otacon.
He goes off and he kills everybody and stops everything. Mm. And it was a really, really fun, amazing game, especially for its time.
Yes. It was definitely very new. It offered a whole bunch of little quirks and tricks to it that made the game really good.
While we've experienced games before and things like Final Fantasy VII and whatnot, where there's lots of cutscenes, so it seemed movie-like, or even things like the original Ninja Gaiden, mm-hmm. where you would have, you know, sort of still almost comic book-style cutscenes. Mm. Therefore, have I seen, you know, they pretty much used the in-game engine for everything, and so it felt like you were experiencing a cinematic movie as a video game.
Right, right.
And it was, the way they cut it was just amazing. It had a really, really neat plot to it that was full of conspiracy theories, and you thought this person was on one side, but then they turned coat on another side. Mm-hmm. But these people you thought were evil or it turned out to be good. It was very much like if you took like an action thriller mm-hmm. and then turned it into a video game and did it well.
My favorite part about the original game was always that it made you, the player, get involved. For example, the Psycho Mantis fight. Or, you know, you need to go do this to find out Meryl's code, etc., etc. And just, I thought that was a really neat aspect of breaking the fourth wall and how they did it.
Oh, yeah. And it definitely made you think about games. Like, mm-hmm. it totally, which, once you played Metal Gear Solid, it totally changed your expectations of what games were, what games could be, and what games should be.
Right.
And so everyone was, of course, excited for the chance for Metal Gear Solid 2. Which ended up coming out for the PS2. And this is where the series sort of takes a weird turn. Because mm-hmm. the first half, it felt like you were back in Metal Gear Solid. You were playing Solid Snake. You were on this big tanker.
Yeah.
And you were doing all these sneaky missions. And everything seemed
just like Metal Gear Solid.
But different. Like, yes. And improved.
Yeah.
Like, you could do things that was crazy. You could shoot a glass of ice. And then watch as the ice melted.
Yeah,
you could shoot like bags of flour and watch the flour pour out.
I thought that was always like, pretty neat.
The attention to detail was just staggering. But then, after you beat the tanker mission, it all changes. Suddenly, you're playing this new guy. You're not playing Salt Snake. You're playing this guy named Raiden, who still refers to himself as Snake.
Yeah.
You know, you still have Colonel Campbell, or you think.
Yeah.
And you're at this place called the Big Shell, and you're off taking out another terrorist group, doing something else with another Metal Gear, and it suddenly, as the game sort of almost seems to come apart the hinges, but intentionally so as you get through the end.
Yeah, I always thought it was kind of humorous that you ended up playing Raiden instead of Solid Snake. I think that was a big joke on Hideo's part.
Oh, yeah.
For that.
Well, apparently, even though they obviously indicated at the end of the first game they were going to make another game.
Yeah.
I don't think he was planning on directing the second game.
Yeah.
But really, nobody else can direct a Miller game like Kojima can.
Pretty much, yeah.
And so he thought he was once again going to change the ideas and how you thought about you played games. And his idea was, apparently, instead you in the last game, you saw how awesome Solid Snake was by being Solid Snake. Mm-hmm. And this one, he thought he wanted you to see how awesome Solid Snake was without being Solid Snake.
Right.
And that's why you're riding. Because Snake's still in here. He goes by the nickname Urquhart Plissken.
Yeah.
And he runs around and does all these awesome things, and you sort of get to see him being awesome without actually being him. And it was an interesting take. A lot of people, some people liked it, a lot of people didn't. And in the end, you found out about things like the Lalalulalo, or the Patriots.
Yes.
You know, AIs, information control, which is kind of neat because before the game came out, only thing everyone ever heard of anything, at least in America, was the Tinker mission.
Yeah.
Like, Raiden was a huge surprise no one was expecting.
No one knew it until they started playing the game. I didn't... When the game actually started, I was like, who is this guy? Why am I playing him? Why does Solid Snake have such a high voice, you know?
And so for, you know, a game about information control, that was really...
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a really neat parallel. Although, here in Japan, they were touting Raiden really big because he's very much the Bishonen, you know, pretty boy type character.
Yeah.
Which I sort of do away with 4, kind of, but anyways... So, the big thing, and after 2, everyone was like, okay, but we're going to play Snake again. And so Hideo was like, okay, yeah, sure. We'll play Snake in the next one. Though I'm not directing it. And then Metal Gear 3 came out, and Hideo was directing again.
Yeah, pretty much.
And you find out you get to play Snake, but you're not playing Solid Snake.
Yeah.
You're playing a guy named Naked Snake.
Yeah.
And then you realize it takes place during the 60s, and people realize pretty quickly... But you get to play the origins of Big Boss, who was the guy that Snake was cloned from, his father, who he killed and fought during the 2 original Metal Gear games, which sort of built the whole foundation of the whole Metal Gear Solid series. And so we got to play his first big mission. It's important because you meet all these characters you've never seen before, like Eva and Major Tom, or later known as Major Zero, Sigint.
Yeah.
Who was the weapons guy, and you get to see the origins of Revolver Ocelot.
Yeah.
Who was, you know, an awesome character in, you know, 1, 2, and turns out to be 3. And it was really, really, really neat and interesting. You got to see things like how the Patriots seemed like you thought they knew how they came to be, and the origins of the Metal Gear legacy, and all sorts of neat stuff. And then everyone's like, that's cool. And then they announced 4. Everyone's like, that looks awesome. And then some of us were kind of like, okay, what are you going to do to us this time? The first time, you got to play Solid Snake. It was awesome. Second game, you thought you didn't play Snake, but turned out to play Raiden.
Yeah.
The third one, you played as Snake, but you played as Big Boss.
Yeah.
Well, he was like, now in the fourth one, you're going to play Solid Snake again. Only this time, he looks like he's like 70.
He was suffering from some rapid aging disease.
Yeah, because...
In the fourth one. So,
yeah,
it doesn't actually take place like 40 years later or whatever.
No, it only takes place like 9 years later, after Metal Gear Solid 1 or 2.
Yes.
But due to the fact that he's a clone, his telomeres or some fancy smanchy DNA, hoodoo voodoo voodoo, pretty much his genes accelerate way faster as far as aging goes than a normal person does.
Right.
And so at the start of the game, he has like 6 months left to live. And the idea behind Metal Gear Solid 4 was war has now become commoditized. And so everything's now ran by what they refer to as PMCs, or private military, you know, corporations. And that was going to be their big thing for Metal Gear Solid 4. And we've now gotten it, we've played it, and it's sort of... I mean, PMCs are definitely a big part of it, but not quite... Well, it seemed like when I was first thinking about it, when they were pitching the idea in the media... was that you'd see all these PMCs fighting out each other and you could sort of choose a side. But that's not how the game world actually works.
Yeah.
The idea is that there are 5 acts, and all in the first 4 acts, each of those 4 acts showcases a different PMC. And there's also renegades that fight against that PMC. And if you start shooting a PMC in front of renegade soldiers, the soldiers will... Renegades will realize that you're helping them, and they'll leave you alone, or in some cases, help you.
Yeah, especially in Act 2. That was...
Yes.
That was very interesting in Act 2.
Act 2 was very, very nice of them to help me.
Yes.
So pretty much the idea behind it is that these PMCs are fighting all the wars now for people instead of, you know, well, you might have...
The actual country's armies.
Country's armies. Then now the armies can, the people can now, who, if you have enough money, can call in these paramilitary corporations who are way more advanced, way more technologically superior to help stamp out these people. And with the PMCs, one of their big things is that they're, there's nanomachines all inside of them regulating their blood flow, their combat reliability, their flexibility, you know, the levels of
muscles, all muscles, that kind of stuff.
Everything, and such that if you're on the same team and your nanomachines can actually talk to each other so you can actually sync up and do actions, you know, corresponding. If, say, I am shooting to the right and there's an enemy that you notice to the left, he can shoot without looking, you know, where it perfect would be in perfect sync, which you normally couldn't do without years and years and years of training, but now you can just sort of pop them out.
Right.
With some quick nanomachines and, you know, a crash course boot camp. And so, however, and there's a system, an AI system, that governs all this information that's supposed to be a third party that's, you know, sort of neutral. No way.
No.
That's once again our friendly friends, the Patriots, the forces that apparently control the United States of America via AIs are controlling this. They are, in fact, the AIs that control this system and are pretty much running this wartime economy. And Snake isn't really off to have to stop them, but Liquid Ocelot is.
Yeah.
In the first game, a Revolver Ocelot gets his arm chopped off by Ninja. And Metal Gear Solid 2, he replaces it with arm from the now-dead Liquid Snake, or Snake's clone brother. And apparently, Liquid would control, could occasionally control Ocelot via the arm, or that's the way it looked.
Yeah. That's the way they explained it in the second game, at least.
And apparently in the third game, their minds have now completely merged with Liquid's on top. And now he's off running around trying to, well, not exactly stop the PMCs, but pretty much take over everything for himself.
Yeah.
And you're sort of stopping Liquid from doing that.
He wanted to take control of the Patriots, basically, so he can control everything. He wanted that power, is what it came down to.
And so pretty much you're off stopping, and that's the general gist of MGS4.
Now, with these nanomachines, it also made everything locked. All kinds of equipment, guns and vehicles, and whatever else they pretty much wanted, really.
Yeah, so they could also tag things, so you knew exactly who was shooting at who, where, when, and how.
Yeah, and only you could use that gun, et cetera, et cetera.
Thankfully, there's a guy named Drebin who is a gunlauter and is an awesome character.
Yeah. He's awesome.
Like, he runs around in this giant tank and his pet monkey.
Yes.
And he shows up and he's like, "Hey, I'm drinking Coke, and I can launder guns for you for a price." And you're like, "What's the price?" "A Drebin points." We're like, "What? If you give me guns, I'll give you points to buy other guns. I don't want guns." And blah, 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 blah. It pretty much becomes an in-game store system.
Yeah.
Where you can buy guns, ammunition, all sorts of stuff.
Every time you get anything, an extra gun, et cetera, et cetera, it gives you currency for Drebin.
Which is a cool way, so now whenever you're picking up guns and ammo, it's nothing's ever wasted anymore.
Yeah. One thing I really liked was, in case you ended up running out of ammo, you could go back and buy some more, because...
Yeah.
I run and gun this game a whole lot more than the others, personally.
Now, if you haven't played a Metal Gear game, I'm sure you have, but...
What the hell are you doing listening to this podcast? But nonetheless...
If you haven't played Metal Gear Solid 4 yet, it plays very similarly to the previous Metal Gears in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
You still... It's still... The game series is always about tactical espionage action. Where you can do stealth and action at the same time. And so you still can sneak around. You still, you know, hide around. Be stealthy. Or you can now do lots of... Or you can run and gun it.
Yeah.
The stealth has been improved with this thing called Octo Camo, where every time you get near a surface, your bodysuit will automatically change that appearance.
So no pressing start and having to switch out camo 8 times when you're, like, in Metal Gear Solid 3.
Right.
It just automatically does it for you, and that's awesome.
And you still get things like, you now, you've upgraded for, you can still have a cardboard box, you can now upgrade to an oil drum.
Oh, that was the best.
And stuff like that. You can also do things like, you know, like I said, if you shoot PMCs while the Renegades are around you, you can now not worry about stealthing around the Renegades. You can just run around with the Renegades, and they are not going to care.
One thing I really liked when talking about pieces of equipment was the solid eye. Not only could it give you, like, night vision or, you know, binocular scope, but it also kind of... It didn't do it exactly, but it kind of brought out the original Metal Gear Solid 1 and 2 radar.
Radar.
Yeah. Not quite as detailed, but it still harkened back to it, and I really miss that aspect from the first two games and the third one. I didn't like just using the camo system, personally.
Well, I mean, it really made sense because you were in the 60s. You couldn't have the Soliton radar system.
I know.
But yeah, the Solid is really neat because it sort of took all these different usual things you would normally get in the Metal Gear over the course of the times. Pretty early on in the game, you got it all at once, and you can choose whatever mode from that solid eye. It was a really nice, you know, multi-use thing that I was glad they included.
Yeah.
You could use it to see through thermal night vision type things. You could see far away, or you could, you know... And not only would you not get the little Soliton-esque radar on the top high-end screen, but you would also see little tags on people if they were blue, if they were good guys, and red, if they were bad guys. You could see guns that you normally wouldn't notice, that it would notice the tags for. It was really, really nice. Mm. And the action has been improved a lot. Like, the action has gotten crazy improvements, where you can move and aim and fire all at the same time now.
Yeah.
Like...
It can play like a first-person shooter if you really want it to.
Like, you know, I've heard some people complain about the action, maybe because I'm just used to the Metal Gear Solid type action, but everything seems so improved to me that I had a lot of fun playing it as an action game this time. Mm-hmm. Though I liked the fact that I could still play it like a Metal Gear action game if I wanted to. I didn't have to run and gun. I could still stand up or sit down or whatever, go in first person and shoot things off. I'm really horrible at the twin stick method, but while you can still certainly play it like that, you don't have to still.
Right.
Which I thought was really nice. You could choose how you wanted to play.
I don't know. I feel that there's a lot less of the game that allows you to sneak around as much as in the first three as well, though. I think there are some situations where it forces you to kind of run and gun it.
But there's also some situations that force you to sneak it.
Yeah, that's also true.
What was it, Act 3? Where you're where you're having to tail a guy for most of the chapter?
Oh, yeah. That was kind of frustrating.
I thought it was a little bit long.
Yeah, I thought it was too.
But, you know...
Because you couldn't actually just hurry along, but you had to tail a guy without having him find you or find out about you.
Or there'd be guys or enemy PMCs against this guy you're trying to tail without him noticing you. Mm-hmm. He would get held up, and you'd have to shoot down the PMCs without them or him noticing you.
There was one interesting part in that act where one of the guys was actually dressed up as a PMC that you had to follow around, and you kind of had to get really close to the PMCs without actually having them find you. And it was just... You had to find out which one he was and start following him around. And in any second, he could have turned around and be like, "Hey, I'm a PMC, die." You know.
But you just had to trust the fact that you could sort of hear sort of a weird whistle from him.
Yeah.
That it was cool. And as much as we're talking about the gameplay, the cutscenes are at least half, if not more than half, of the game.
Yeah.
And the reason I think it is because it is trying to tie, because through one, especially two and three, there's a lot of dangling threads. And some dangling threads I didn't even know even existed. And it four goes out of its way to tie every single thing up.
It does.
Whether you want to or not. And the way they did it was through extensive cutscenes.
That was kind of one of my complaints. I thought they kind of went overboard on the cutscenes. But they also made good on their promise to answer everything. And just they kind of started laying stuff out ever since the beginning of the game. They're like, this does this, this is why this is, etc., etc. And I was satisfied by the end of the game.
And the cutscenes are phenomenal. Like,
oh yes,
these are like the best cutscenes in video games, and in some cases, better than a lot of movies.
Some cutscenes are as long as movies.
It's just true. There's some really long cutscenes.
They try to fool you. They try to break it up and let you save in between certain cutscenes, but some of them are really freaking long.
And sometimes, like I said, they'll answer questions that I didn't even realize I needed to ask.
Yeah.
Like, I remember one time where they tell you the origins of who the Patriots are, and you find out it's pretty much the cast of Metal Gear Solid 3.
Yeah.
And I was like, what? The Patriots are who? All these guys I thought were heroes are now were villains?
Yes.
Like, Sagan was the DARPA chief and Metal Gear Solid 1?
Yep. What?
Of course, you never even actually get to meet the DARPA chief because you found out he was Decoy Octopus, but, you know, it was just something like, it's like, okay, the person who made the ninja was paramedic. We thought it was a guy, which actually clarified in the database. After the game Metal Gear Solid 4 came out, they released online on the PlayStation Network for PS3 the Metal Gear Solid database, which was this one huge interactive encyclopedia about Metal Gear stuff.
Right. And didn't you find out that Cyber Ninja was Gray Fox, right? But I think you found that out
in the first game. Yeah. But he was created by a person named Dr. Clark. Mm-hmm. And everyone thought, the way the game was worded for him, that he was male. But then they revealed that Dr. Clark was paramedic.
Who was female,
and apparently they saw that was like she had gotten to the point that she was so slovenly or so into her, like, you know, research that she no longer looked like a female anymore.
Right.
She was so haggard, she looked malish. I guess. Yeah, as much things as they explain, and you're like, oh, they're setting that up. There's a lot of things that feel like we had to make an excuse, so here it is.
Yeah.
Which kind of works out if you look at it on the base level, but as soon as you start really thinking about it, it loses traction.
Speaking of hot doctors, Naomi Hunter. She was hot in this game.
Yeah, she was. Meryl wasn't, you know, that bad herself.
Meryl wasn't that bad. She was a little butchy for my taste, but...
Oh, a little, but considering who she is.
Yeah, true.
But, of course, this game was filled with hotties. I mean...
Of course.
The freaking whole Beauty and the Beast squad.
Yeah. Pretty much. Oh my god.
There is... That was neat. All the boss battles, all major boss battles, you know how in every game, Metal Gear Solid game, there's usually a unit that you have to fight against. Foxhound, Dead Cell, the Furies, were they called them? Or?
I think there were the Furies in the third one.
Not the Furies, it was the Emotions, whatever.
Something.
There was a group that had, they're all based off different emotions in 3. And 4, there was the Beauty and the Beast Corps. Mm. And they're all references to the original Foxhound because they're ran by Liquid Snake. Or Liquid Ocelot. You had, to start with, Laughing Octopus,
mm-hmm.
Raging Raven,
can't remember.
Crying Wolf.
Crying Wolf, yes, that was it. Crying Wolf.
And was it Screaming Octopus?
No, because the second one was Laughing Octopus.
No, it was Screaming Mantis.
Screaming Mantis, yes, who was a throwback to the Psycho Mantis character.
Yeah.
One of my complaints was that in all the Metal Gear Solid games, like, you had to figure out some special, neat thing to destroy the boss. They all had weird little quirks. And this one, it was much more straightforward, just point and shoot at all of them until the Psycho Mantis character. That's when you kind of had to think about what to do.
Well, first one, I mean, you had to find Laughing Octopus first.
Well, you did have to find her.
Because she was always hidden with her Octocamo as well.
Mm-hmm. True.
The second one, Raging Raven, was pretty much, yeah, point and click.
Point and click.
You just had to wait for her to show up at you to point and click. Mm-hmm. You know, you had to find, then again, in the third one, you had to find Crying Wolf.
Yeah.
Because she was running around everywhere.
Yeah.
But yeah, with...
It was pretty straight up point and shoot, though, with her as well.
Well, with Scream Mantis, it was... There were phases to this fight.
Yeah.
Much like the Psycho Mantis fight. And they play with you as much as they can. They really couldn't do quite so much. You couldn't exactly...
There was a whole bunch of throwbacks to the first Psycho Mantis fight in this game where they tried to impress you. It was like, oh, we're on PS3 now. We can't do any of that. Which was pretty funny.
Oh, yeah. It, in the original Psycho Mantis fight, he would start off with things like, I can read your mind. And he would look at your data on your PS1 memory card and see if you had any Konami games like Castlevania. So you go, oh, you like Castlevania.
And at that time, you were like, holy crap!
And then he would do things like, I can show you true power. Set your controller on the floor. And then, if it was a DualShock, it would rumble the controller on the floor. And as he was going, with his mind, and every time he would command the controller to move, it would rumble.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a really neat, you know, out of, you know, fourth wall breaking moment. You're like, yeah. That was interesting.
Yeah.
Now, if you have a DualShock 3 controller, he'll do that again.
Really?
And then he'll go, Rumble is back!
Oh, man.
Right before he dies. But you have a DualShock 3 controller to do it. I also like to throw back in Act 4?
Mm.
Where you go back to Shadowmoast Island, where Otacon's like, you need to change the disc too. Oh, wait.
We're on Blu-ray.
Lol. Yeah.
Speaking of which, that whole act was pretty awesome. Going back to the entire... They pretty much make you play throughout Shadow Moses all over again.
Yeah, well...
But it's not
as bad.
Select
scenes, sort of.
Slick scenes, yeah.
The, what they do is, first off, Act 1's good. 2 is amazing. 3's kind of annoying. 4 is amazing again.
Yeah.
And 5 was cool.
Basically, yeah.
Had cool moments. But 4, Act 4, you have to go back to Shadow Moses Island... Because they, for some reason, need the railgun on the original Metal Gear Rex. And a lot, one of the major themes in this is obsolescence. Snake's getting old. His nanomachines can't quite sync up with the latest nanomachine technology anymore. You know, this and that. And they really show you just the differences between the original Metal Gear Solid, Metal Gear Solid 4. They first do is they sort of give you a flashback without telling you.
Yeah.
We had to play through the first opening segment of Metal Gear Solid 1 as Metal Gear Solid 1.
Yeah.
The PlayStation game looks 1 graphics like it, and all.
Yeah. Plays like it is exactly like the Metal Gear Solid 1 game.
And as you once you get into once you get and it plays you as you try to enter into Shadow Moses Island or at the compound. And then Snake will wake up and then they'll drop you off. And once again, you have to go to Shadow Moses. And it looks completely different because there's just so much more power to that new engine. It's on PS3 rather than on the PlayStation 1.
Yeah.
And everything looks so eerie because it looks like, you know, in Metal Gear Solid 1, there are people moving through it. There wasn't a lot of people, but enough to keep it, you know, inhabited. And this one, everything's old, derelict. It hasn't been used in 9 years. Everything's falling apart.
Yeah.
And it was really just, it was, as you would go through different areas, you would suddenly hear, like, you know, old vocal clips, audio clips.
From the first game.
For the first game, as you heard your conversations that you played, you know, those many years ago, as Solid Snake sort of reliving its past by going through, and some of the old gaming conventions was to return. They had these weird freaking looking, like, humanoid, these eyeballs that had like humanoid limbs on them as our sort of sentry drones running around, and they would use little lasers to try and find out where people would be, and they've sort of mimicked the same sort of, you know,
yeah,
the things. In the very end, as you slowly crawl through, and you and Otacon reminisce the first time y'all met about the ninja and this and that, and the very final thing is you get Metal Gear Rex. And then you have to escape using Metal Gear Rex.
Oh my god.
So you actually get to play as a Metal Gear. And that was possibly my favorite moment of the game.
Yeah, mine too.
Was you got to hop into Rex and bust out of there.
Tear ass as Rex. And it was
tear ass Rex. And you actually go through the same tearing ass as you left in one of the final scenes in the first game, which you had to fight Liquid through a vehicle mission.
Mm-hmm.
Where I think either Otacon or Meryl was driving the car where you were manning the gun. You had to gun down people as you were flying through these hallways. You got to fly through these hallways as Rex, destroying stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And at the very end of that, Liquid pops out with a Metal Gear Ray. Suddenly it's a Rex versus Ray battle.
Yes.
And that was really cool.
Being able to control Rex against another Metal Gear was basically a giant mecha game fighting the game. And
like, it was really, really neat, and really, you know, showed, like, you know, it sort of paralleled the Snake really well. Even though Snake's old, he's decrepit, he's barely, in a sense, working, but just through sheer gumption, and I'm going to beat this, Rex pulls through and defeats Ray, and it's just sort of like, you know, things, you know, that the old still can conquer the new, as long as your heart's in it, which is a very Japanese thing.
Yeah. I thought it was neat.
And they sort of, and they throw a lot of things back to, but I saw one, like, in the very end of the game, one of your major boss battles is a big fist out with Liquid.
Yeah.
Which was cool and kind of lame at the same time. and that the controls were kind of wonky.
Yeah.
But I did a lot of throwbacks to the various styles of the games, and the way you would fight, the combat would change based on the game.
Right, right. The first one was obviously based on the first game. Second one played music from the second game, had combat like the second game, et cetera,
et cetera. Yeah, the combat would advance along with your life bars and music and everything based on what game. You sort of played through all of them in a sense at once. And it was just a giant throwback, which is really neat, but also controlled kind of clunky.
Yeah.
But
that was the closest they ever pulled off to having you involved in a cutscene, though, which was pretty neat.
Well, I mean, there was also the scene also in Act 4 where you're having to shoot down the robotic things that look almost like Metal Gears but aren't quite.
Yeah.
While Liquid, not Liquid, Raiden, who's back, is fighting off Vamp, who was a boss in Metal Gear Solid 2.
Yeah.
And they're having this awesome-looking knife fight on one half of the screen, and you're stuck shooting down robots in the second half. And I was like, well, this is really cool, but I kind of want to watch this awesome knife fight.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, a lot of the characters come back. Raiden comes back as a cybernetic ninja badass.
Yes, Raiden is not a shitty Bishonen anymore.
He is now an awesome, cybered out, almost sort of Bishonen, except he looks really freaky as a cyborg.
Yeah.
So he doesn't quite count as Bishonen anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But he's totally, you know, as far as people were complaining about him sucking in the second game, there's no complaints here. I've had a lot of people I heard complain that they couldn't play as Raiden this time.
Yeah.
It was sort of a neat, you know, reversal.
They made him so cool that people wanted to play him again. And that was, I thought, that was neat.
But yeah, you know, Meryl comes back, Naomi comes back, Colonel Campbell comes back, Rose comes back.
Mm-hmm. Everyone comes back
and has some sort of thing. Even Johnny Sakaki.
Yeah.
Or Akiba.
Yeah.
Who has been in every single game. I think even like, and his ancestor was in 3.
Oh, nice.
Johnny Sakaki is this guy you meet the very first game, Metal Gear Solid. And he's an enemy troop. However, he has stomach issues.
Yes.
And he constantly runs away to having... And that sort of happens in both the first game and the second game, mm-hmm. where you have to escape from somewhere. He's the one guarding you. And he has to run away to use the bathroom. That's your chance to escape. And this time, he's on your side. He's in Meryl's patrol called the Rat Patrol. Now, that has the name, nickname, Akiba.
Yeah.
Which I think is probably a reference to Akihabara.
It might be. I'm not really sure. I mean,
but he still has the same problems, and they really go overboard with his stomach problems in this one. There's a few scenes in Act 1 where you're like, all right,
I get
fart jokes. I don't need any more.
Yeah.
But no, they go the extra mile.
They do.
Yeah. But he's back, and he ends up being a way cooler character in the end than I ever expected out of him.
Yeah.
Like, he becomes a certifiable badass.
Even Mei Ling came back. They brought back Mei Ling for the last game. Which was refreshing.
Yes. And like Kojima does, they're all hotties. Oh, that's what we were mentioning about the Beauty and the Beast Corps. The Beauty and the Beast Corps are all these women who've been ravaged by war and have gone insane. Mm-hmm. However, underneath all these giant monstrous looking metal suits, they're all supermodels.
Yeah, they're all hot. Like, I think they actually used supermodels to base
they did.
What they were looking like.
Yes. In fact, you can see photo spreads of them like in various books. Throughout the game. And in fact, if you run away from them enough, the screen will turn just pure white.
Uh-huh.
You have like 4 minutes left to beat them, but if you pull out your camera, which you can get in one of the briefing mm-hmm. for each act, there's a briefing.
Mm-hmm.
And you control the Metal Gear Mark II, which is a little robot that can help you out.
Yeah.
You control him during the briefings. And you can find a camera, I think, in the briefing for Act 2. Anyways, you can take pictures of them when they are in the white room,
mm.
and they'll actually like pose for you and stuff.
Wow!
Like supermodels.
I did not get that part.
And apparently, like if you lie down, they'll lie down for you. And
wow!
Like it's
that's kind of interesting.
It's kind of interesting and kind of creepy.
Yeah, very true.
I mean, you see guys, and they're definitely very attractive ladies, but in the context where you see them and they're coming after you,
that's creepy.
Like I'm like. That could be hot, But no, this is just disturbing.
Not right now.
But yeah, there's a lot of neat things to like about Metal Gear Solid 4. And right. if you enjoy Metal Gear, you are going to want to play through Metal Gear Solid 4. Like, there's not a question about it.
Yes.
The trick is just how much you're willing to go to do this. Now,
we had to have the answers.
Well, yeah,
that's what happened with us, or at least for me. That's what drew me.
Now, like I said, the trick is how much do you want to play this game? And that really has to be your question. If you really want to play this game, if you're a big Metal Gear fan, buying a PS3 might justify it. Frankly, right now, I thought it to myself that I thought, no. I'm a huge Metal Gear fan. I have bought every version of Metal Gear ever. I even own the digital novel on PSP. Both versions of Portable Ops. Yeah, if there's a version of Metal Gear, I own it.
Nice.
However, there are, as far as I'm concerned, since I already own a 360, there's no other games besides Metal Gear that I want to play on the PS3 that I can't get on the 360.
True.
So I have no reason to buy this game except for Metal Gear Solid 4.
I kind of felt the same way. That's why I wanted to use a friend's system like you did to play through it, just so I could figure out the story.
I thought it was still worth paying full retail value for limited edition to at least own the game when I eventually will buy a PS3.
Yeah.
Once either A, they become cheaper, or B, when there's more games come out to warrant buying one. Yes.
Well, you can always buy Genji.
Now, oh yeah, Crab Battle's great.
Yes, Crab Battle's. Speaking of Metal Gear.
apparently, there was a podcast for Evil Avatar, where David Hayter, said Crab Battle.
Oh, really?
And Solid Snake voice for them.
Nice.
And they did some lines for Metal Gear Awesome, which is another awesome Flash-based thing.
Haven't seen that one yet.
It's good.
Oh, okay.
But, yeah, David Hayter's awesome.
Of course.
The voice of Solid Snake, all snakes, and he's one of my favorite voice actors ever.
Yeah.
He also writes a couple of really good screenplays, like the first two X-Men movies. But,
he's Solid Snake.
He really is. But yeah, so, but if you want, if you're needing an excuse to buy a Blu-ray player, then you're probably going to buy a PS3 anyways, because they're cheaper than most Blu-ray players.
Yeah.
And then you might as well buy the 80 gig bundle, which is $500, which comes with Metal Gear Solid 4.
Yes. Metal Gear Solid Pack.
So, if that's the case, then I would definitely, buy a 360, PS3. Yes. You should also own a 360, because that's really awesome games.
Yes.
But
you can add us to your Xbox Live friends on the Awesome Cast.
I wonder if we should put up our gamer tags up somewhere.
Let's do that. We can put it in the About Us section or whatever.
So yeah, we'll definitely put our Xbox Live tags in the About Us section or somewhere. But anyways, Metal Gear Solid 4. Definitely worth playing. I would say I would pay $50 to rent the system for a week or something from a rental place just to play this game.
I agree. If you don't have a friend you can borrow a PS3 from, then yeah, definitely do that. Especially if you're a Metal Gear fan. And even if you're a Metal Gear fan, I probably wouldn't buy a PS3 just for it.
Like, and definitely if you're thinking about buying a PS3 for Metal Gear 4, and you've yet to play the first three Metal Gears, play the first three Metal Gears.
Yes.
They have even, in fact, put out the Metal Gear Collection, Essentials Collection, for PS2, which contains all the first three Metal Gear games, and they're the nice versions of all three. Mm-hmm. You get a, which is really weird, because the PlayStation 1 version is what Metal Gear Solid 1 is.
Yeah.
With the two discs. Mm-hmm. It's weird to see sort of a brand new black back PlayStation 1 disc.
Yeah.
That was weird. Anyways, you get the Subsistence version of 2 and the Subsistence version of 3. So you get the best versions of 2 and 3 all in this one collection for $30. Which is totally worth it if you want a PS2. Or a PS3 and you don't own Metal Gear yet. Buy them. They're awesome. But we're talking about 4, so I guess we should discuss how many awesomes.
A big, giant Metal Gear ray of awesome. That's what I say.
Man, screw that. I'm going to bust up your ray with my Rex.
Go for it. With the multiple Macross missiles. Oh my god, it had Macross missiles.
Yes, it was so cool.
It was awesome.
You could like target people and boom, boom, boom.
It was awesome.
It was awesome. This game is awesome. I'm going to give it a Metal Gear. But awesome.
Snake.
Snake.
Snake!
This has been the Awesome Cast. If you want to learn more about us, or if you liked us, check us out on the web at osmcast.com and leave a message or a comment in the comment section.
Awesome Cast. So awesome, only three letters can contain it.
Or you can leave us an email at osmcast@gmail.com. Or you can send us a voicemail at the Awesome Line, area code 206-426-5063.
Bye-bye.